the O, and the Dub. Welcome to Junior, the CHL podcast with Jeff Merrick and Sam Cosentino. From now until the MasterCard Memorial Cup, this is the destination for news, opinion, and prospects. No one does the CHL like this.
We are back on the air, Jeff Merrick alongside Sam Cosentino. Another edition, an early one this week, of Junior, your CHL weekly podcast. Thanks for joining us and thanks for putting up with us while we were on hiatus. Why? Well, because it was the holidays and there was plenty of junior hockey action to watch, both in the Western Hockey League, the Quebec Major Junior League, the OHL, and Sam will begin the discussion by talking about what we just saw over the past couple of weeks in Montreal and Toronto. Canada captures gold. A lot of new stories and a lot of new heroes were made in the process. Your wide brush thoughts on what we saw at the U20s this year.
I think it's a wonderful event. I've always thought that, but I think the parity in the event is what struck me most. I mean, you know, the Danes were in every game and they became the darlings until they finally got blown out by Canada. You know, the Germans, unfortunately, without Leon Draisaitl, really couldn't get any traction and as a result relegated. So, you know, 9 of the 10 teams were in every game. I think it was awesome that the Slovaks were able to win their Stanley Cup by beating the Czechs and then win like their second Stanley Cup by winning the bronze. So unbelievable parity, a fantastic event. And to be perfectly honest with you, Jeff, I'm surprised it went off as well as it did in two very non-traditional junior markets.
Yeah, that was the big question going in. We've seen this tournament succeed in the quote-unquote traditional junior markets. This one was a real test. I think Toronto passed. We'll give it a passing grade. Montreal and their attendance woes kind of became a sidebar story that grew bigger and bigger as each day went on, didn't it, Sam?
Well, to the point where Rene Fasel even didn't close the door on the tournament not being played there in 2017, which is supposed to be the back half of this split bid. But you know, I will say this: I've lived in or outside of just outside of Toronto my whole life. Toronto people are front runners, and when they see a major league event, they'll go and support it. They'll support the Toronto Maple Leafs for whatever reason, regardless of whether they're good or bad. But if you're the Argos or the Blue Jays or the Toronto Rock, you better be a winning team, winning championships, or you better have the unbelievable rock star player who's the greatest player in the league, or you're not going to be supported. And when it comes to Canada and Canada's games, you know, of course, the people of Toronto stepped up and supported that well. But make no mistake about it, neither of these two markets are on my mind, ever going to be able to have a Canadian Hockey League team in their centers.
Coming up on today's podcast, we'll talk to the Director of Hockey Operations and Head Coach of the North Bay Battalion, that is Stan Butler. In our CHL alumni segment, we'll talk to former Niagara Falls Thunder netminder Manny Legacy, and we'll also talk to Connor McDavid, who has a shiny gold medal around his neck. Your thoughts on what Team Canada did, and who really popped for you? For me, Josh Morrissey became a huge story. If you're a Jets fan, get excited because this guy is fantastic. Nick Patan, another Winnipeg Jets prospect, really popped. If you're a Sabres fan, you're loving Sam Reinhart. But who did it for you? Who really jumped out for Sam Cosentino?
I really like Nick Paul. And, you know, Stan warned me about him last year and said that this is a guy that's world junior, you know, ready. And I didn't quite agree. And then watched him play in the OHL Championship and thought, yeah, okay, he's pretty good. But I don't know if he's quite at that level. And that's a guy who impressed me a lot, so the Ottawa Senators have to be happy with he and Curtis Lazar, no question about it. But Braden Point, I thought, was excellent last night in the championship game. The poor guy got demoted off of that line with McDavid and Lazar and gave way to Patan in the semifinal against Slovakia, and rightfully so with Patan's hat trick. But Braden Point is about as consistent a player as I can remember seeing in my 10 years. He gives you the same game night in and night out, and I thought he was dynamite last night and had a point to show for it.
Back end, Darnell Nurse became a darling, and Oilers fans are certainly excited about that blue liner. But Josh Morrissey of the, once again, the powerhouse Kelowna Rockets, and we'll talk about some of their moves coming up in a couple of seconds. I thought Josh Morrissey was the best defenseman for Canada, hands down.
Yeah, he was, Jeff. He, for me, though, I mean, I like Nurse. I like Nurse as Canada's best defenseman, and you know, you and I could argue he or Morrissey. But the one thing about Morrissey that stuck out for me was he started to assert himself physically, which in my previous viewings wasn't a big part of his game. And maybe that taste with St. John's last year after Prince Albert's season had ended really made him alert to the fact that he's going to at least have some of that element in his game in order to be successful. But I thought he was dynamite. I couldn't agree more with you there. Anyone who jumped for you other than Morrissey, anyone up front or anyone unsung?
Well, I mean, Anthony Duclair shouldn't be a surprise, although he really jumped. But yeah, listen, man, you know, maybe because I had such a sour taste about all the 95s in London last year with the Knights, but Max Domi, to me, just looks like a different player. Yeah. He looks like a more mature player.
Different
that
guy.
Pass, yeah, you know what, Sam, that pass he made on the first goal yesterday where he had to get through how many skates and how many sticks, and he put it perfectly on the tape of Anthony Duclair, that is such a mature veteran pass. Is it dangerous? Is it risky? Yeah, but he did it with full confidence and pulled it off. And all tournament long, we saw a Domi that didn't get distracted. We saw a Domi that got punched in the face and roughed up and, you know, elbowed in the head off the opening draw last night, and it didn't faze him. I mean, last year we saw Domi get unhinged a couple of different times. This was a mature, focused Max Domi, and I never thought, Sam, for a day in my life, that we'd ever hear a crowd in Montreal chant Domi. But there it was at the Bell Center. I never thought I would hear that with my ears. So, yeah, to me, Max really jumped out.
Yeah, he was really good. And his game is growing. I mean, I've watched him, you know, I've watched him for years now. So I have a real good feel for what his game is all about. He has learned really to use his teammates much better. He has learned to pay attention that, you know, the neutral zone and your own blue line are really important areas in which a guy with his stick and his speed can really create havoc and transition the other way. He could always shoot the puck like a pro. His acceleration is pro-like already. He at times can be a real jerk to play against, and I think that's what's going to serve him well going to the National Hockey League. And for me to see his progression from last year to this year, I'll be honest with you, and I went on record saying it, Jeff, he didn't deserve an invite last year. Based on the games leading up to camp, he didn't deserve that invite. This year, he was their best player.
Yeah, he was exceptional, and he does get rewarded, we should point out, in the All-Star for the World Junior Hockey Championships. Dennis Kodla is your All-Star goaltender. Gustav Forsling of Sweden, defenseman Josh Morrissey as well, Sam Reinhardt, Connor McDavid, and Max Domi. Let's get to some CHL news, and boy, it's been hot and heavy with the trades, and let's try to dissect as many as we can here, starting with the world's worst-kept secret. Leon Draisaitl gets sent down to PA from the Edmonton Oilers, shuffled over to Kelowna. Chris Schmiedel going the other way. D-man Dalton York in a first-round pick in the Bantam draft. Your thought with Leon on the Kelowna Rockets?
Leon should have been on the Prince Albert Raiders back in September. That's where Leon should have been, and Leon should have been with Germany at the World Juniors. And now Leon is going to get a chance, I think, to play for a WHL title. I mean, he's an excellent player. I think he's going to come back and assert himself. He's going to regain his confidence. He's going to get to play with some wonderful players, and Nick Merkley and Rourke Chartier and Kirkland. I mean, he's a difference maker. There's no question about it. And I think you have to put Kelowna as the favorite now. Just disappointing for me that, you know, to see another forward from the Edmonton Oilers at a young age kind of get spoiled, and they're doing him right by sending him back for sure.
Yeah, I see what you're talking about. I mean, in a lot of ways, the move for Draisaitl to keep him with the Oilers, it was the ineffectiveness of Oilers management to secure another centerman in the offseason, because there's no way that guy should have been rushed into that duty, given that, although here's a 100-point guy in the Western Hockey League, he still needed work with his skating. And there's nothing wrong with sending a guy back to junior. PA was going to be in sell-off mode. We saw that with the Josh Morrissey deal to Kelowna, who once again have, you know, the back end that is the envy of the entire CHL. Go there and then come back full of confidence. It was a real head-scratcher from day one. But, Sam, I remember talking with you in Philadelphia at the draft and talking to people around the Oilers organization a couple days after the draft who said, don't expect Draisaitl to go back to the Western League. We have plans of keeping him in the NHL. And it was a head-scratcher to me. I couldn't understand it.
maybe part of it was worried that he was going to go back and play pro in Germany. I mean, you don't always know the dynamics of it all, but in terms of just pure development, there was no question that's where he should have been to start the year. And now he'll get the opportunity to go back there and maybe refine the touch that made him one of the best players in the Western League last year. I mean, I don't know. Those are always difficult decisions, but I will juxtapose it, and it is somewhat different with Darnell Nurse. There was great temptation on the part of the Oilers, I think, to keep Nurse both last year and this year especially, and they did him right by sending him back to Sault Ste. Marie. Jeff, I'm not sure how you feel about it, but he, to me now, the way he's tailed back his game, scaled back his game, he looks like a pro right now, and I think he's ready for the National Hockey League. And why? Because he went back last year, faced adversity by not making the camp list for the World Junior team. Went back, changed his game, matured, and guy's dynamite. I think he's going to be ready next year. I really do.
Yeah, it was. I almost thought that they didn't need to give him the audition at the beginning of the year, considering how it was going to be so challenging for Edmonton to win out of the gate, and they needed to. The one team in the NHL that couldn't afford a bad start, and they got one. And there they were, you know, doing the audition with Darnell Nurse. There's Brad Hunt on the point, Mac T's guy from the Colorado Wolves when he coached there. It was a weird one for me, but you're bang on about Darnell Nurse. This guy's ready to jump in, and he'll be on that back end for the Oilers next season. The Brandon Wheat Kings may be a squad that's you could argue is built for next season, but they're still kind of going for it this year. Morgan Klimchuk finds himself from Regina. We'll talk about them in a second. He's now a Wheat King. Your thoughts on the Calgary prospect going to Brandon?
Excellent two-way player, really fits nicely into that group because they give him it gives license to some of the other forwards to really kind of go all out and worry more about the offense, where Klimchuk can do a lot of good things in all three zones. They get Reid Gao coming back from the Manitoba Bisons in a very subtle trade to acquire his overage rights and get him out of CIS and back to finish up his overage year. So they look primed in the Eastern Conference now to make a big move.
Medicine Hat Tigers, they pick up Regina's leading scorer, Dryden Hunt. Also, their captain, Kyle Burrows, in exchange for Connor Hobbs, a second and a third. The stingiest defensive team in the Western Hockey League just got a little bit stronger, Sammy.
Yeah, they sure did. And it's interesting to watch what Regina is doing in its sell-off. I mean, John Paddock has come in there and just said, hey, listen, we really want to build for the future. We know we have a good team now, and it kind of hurts us to trade away some of our key guys. But this is what we feel we need to do to get the organization back on track, not just for a year or two, but to be able to sustain. And I think the market will bear that out, in 3, maybe 4 or 5 years from now.
Build the whole thing around Sam Steele.
Build the whole thing around Sam Steele. Gabriel's a wonderful player who adds some grit and toughness there as well. So I think with those pieces moving forward, they should be well positioned.
One more trade in the Western Hockey League, then we'll move on to the OHL and the Q. The Hitmen and the Portland Winterhawks, goalie for goalie, Evan Johnson and a fourth to the Winterhawks in exchange for Brendan Burke. And we had heard this going back a couple of weeks, so the Portland Winterhawks were done starting Brendan Burke. But your thoughts on this deal?
Well, Aiden Hill has played so good now in Portland, and he's obviously taken over the job there. I had some concerns about Burke going back to last year, but he was able to get him into a WHL championship again. And maybe this move, with Sean Burke's ties to Hockey Canada, maybe, there's something to that. But when it comes to the Calgary Hitmen, it probably tells you that Thatcher Demko is not going to arrive on their doorstep anytime soon.
Yeah, although they traded for the rights a couple of weeks ago. To the OHL, we'll start with North Bay, and we'll get into this a little bit more with Stan Butler, who's the Director of Hockey Operations and Head Coach for the Battalion. Nick Mutry goes to North Bay, goaltender Evan Cormier. 3 seconds, 1/3, and 2/4 going to Saginaw. What do you make of this deal? I guess, listen, North Bay, I guess if you're North Bay, you look at the Eastern Conference and you say to yourself, this is a 2, maybe 3-team race. We better load up here because we're in that mix.
Yeah, and that's exactly the thinking of Stan Butler. And let's not forget, in order to be the champ, you got to beat the champ. And they won the Eastern Conference last year. So they're still the defending champions until someone takes it away. You can't argue with the year Oshawa's had to this point, but adding a couple of pieces for Stan, really, when you look at their back end and their goaltending is almost the exact same as it was last year, adding a little depth of scoring up front was something that he wanted to address, and I think he was able to do it with these deals.
Yeah, the other deal, of course, Ryan Kujawinski goes from the Kings and Frontenacs to North Bay. You mentioned the Oshawa Generals. The Michael McCarron deal, alongside Dakota Mermis, goes to the Generals, going back the other way. Cliff Pooh, who's a first-round draft pick last year, also Josh Sturk, who they picked up last year, in and around trade deadline time. Oshawa, and for good reason, they are all in on the season, number one team in the CHL.
Yeah, and Brent Peterson comes over from Kitchener too, so he's a guy who can fit in that 6-7-8 range in terms of their forward group with Del Cole there. Mitchell Van de Sample's a dynamite player in the back end. Appleby's had an all-world year, so they look poised to go all in. And when you think of a team that's been number one in the country or number one or two for the last however many weeks, adding those kinds of pieces, that's a pretty strong statement to make for your fan base and a pretty strong statement to make to the rest of the OHL that they're not fooling around.
You know, before picking up Mermis in that deal, I know Oshawa had kicked tires in Plymouth about Gianluca Cucurutto, who's an overage defenseman as well, went to Montreal camp last year. And I do wonder what ends up happening to Plymouth in all this. Matt Mistely's name is out there. This hasn't been the season they thought it would be for the Plymouth Whalers. You see them turning into a seller team ASAP?
Great question, but I think the one question, and we're going to have to get to the bottom of it, Jeff, because that deadline is passed now, that December 31st deadline for applying for relocation is passed.
Yeah.
So we'll have to dig that one up a little bit, but I think that has a lot to do with it. And I think until we have that answer, you won't be able to properly assess what Plymouth is up to.
The Erie Otters pick up Remy Ellie, Jake Marchman from Belleville, Trent Fox, Jesse Saban going the other way. Six picks, by the way, three of them in the second round. Your thoughts on this deal, which fortifies the team that many hope to see in the MasterCard Memorial Cup because they want to see Connor McDavid on the in the CHL's biggest showcase.
Yeah, that's a big deal. I still think Erie needs to address the back end a little bit. You know, the goaltending has been good. It needs to be great, I think. But getting those two pieces should help them have the puck a lot longer and should help them to continue to score even more goals than they already have scored. And let's not forget, Jeff, they acquired in the trade a guy by the name of Connor McDavid who's essentially missed the last 7 or 8 weeks. So
yeah,
it's
sudden,
like getting a guy in a deal, really.
Yeah, you know? No, and it doesn't cost you anything either. And he's coming in with a gold medal around his neck. We'll talk to him here in a couple of seconds. On the Q side of things, don't look now, but the team that hosts the MasterCard Memorial Cup, the Quebec Ramparts, just got that much stronger. The Rangers sending gold medalist Anthony Duclair back to the Ramparts. So they have Kachev, they have Fukali, they have Murphy, they picked up Jerome Verrier. Your thoughts on the host team getting that much stronger, Sammy?
Yeah, they needed to do that. They needed for that to happen, for the Rangers to really help them out in that regard. It'll be good for Anthony, too, because, you know, you go up, you try and find your way, you get a nice taste of what life is like up there, and then you use that as incentive to move forward. You put a gold medal around your neck. Maybe you hoist a cup, not quite the one that you're thinking of, but the MasterCard Memorial Cup is still a pretty darn good trophy to hoist. They'll have the opportunity to do that. But that group of forwards now, Jeff, is pretty spectacular with Timoshaw and, you know, you've got Ernie there, and Etchegaray's a really good player. Marc-Olivier Roy, I mean, that's... You could probably look at their top nine and say, wow, they're well on their way to doing some good things.
Yeah. How would you handicap now? We talked about, we talked a little bit about, you know, Brandon and what Kelowna has done. And if you look at the OHL, and in the OHL, we await to see what happens with a player like Nick Ritchie. As of this podcast taping, he hasn't been moved. Expectation is there are two teams that are in the bidding. Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, I would have to think, would be the front runner. Barry has been interested in Nick Ritchie as well. Justin Bailey is still there from the Kitchener Rangers. How would you handicap all three leagues at this point as trade deadlines start to come to a conclusion?
Oh boy, that's an interesting question. I mean, it kind of goes in this continuum that the Quebec League has the most action, the Ontario Hockey League usually has some big names moving, and the Western Hockey League has limited movement. But that's kind of been thrown on its heels with Morrissey and Draisaitl moving, with Klimchuk moving in the Western Hockey League. Those, to me, right now are the biggest names as a collection. Now, yes, you can talk about McCarron and Remy Elie and those guys in the Ontario Hockey League, but I think the bigger names that have been moved to this point reside in the WHL. And Quebec League, just a lot of moving parts. The trades in Quebec are a lot different. You know, there's a lot of stuff that happens in August. Their trading periods are different to accommodate schooling. So you're seeing some things happen later than maybe they should, or at different times than you might expect. But handicapping everything right now, I still think there's work to be done in all three leagues. And you have to wonder now what the response is going to be from a Rimouski. What does Moncton do? They've already moved a couple of really big guys in Lalonde and Kachev, yet still hanging around the CHL's top 10. So that, to me, is going to be fascinating to see what Moncton does. Whatever the heck happens in St. John now, I mean, getting Bokanji Yamama for a first and a second. I love what Darryl Young has done this year over there, but that one is a bit of a head-scratcher for me. And the Western Hockey League, I mean, I would have to think that teams would be relenting to both the Regina Pats and the Kelowna Rockets in their respective conferences at this point.
Yeah, St. John is an interesting story, and they do bring in, that is some serious toughness. Like, some serious toughness that they brought in. You know, by trading Olivier LeBlanc, I do wonder about trading your captain at this time of year when you're in a position. I know they're being built for when they make the bid and they actualize as that team we all think they can be. I do wonder about trading your captain at the time that they did. I know they got a year younger with the player that comes back, but that one to me is a little bit of a head scratcher, Sammy.
It is, but you have to give him credit in that his focus is clearly on 2017. And if the last couple of years have taught us anything about the MasterCard Memorial Cup, you better have a darn good team going in, because you don't want to embarrass your organization, you don't want to embarrass your league, and of course, you want to be able to compete for a title. And London wasn't quite up to snuff last year, yet they, a hockey team that's played a lot of hockey, and Saskatoon wasn't quite up to snuff the year before. You go back to 2012, and everyone had Shawinigan written off and dead to rights before they rallied back to win it all. So I think the last couple of years have taught us that as a host team, you want to be going in with the deck stacked, and give Darryl Young for sticking to that game plan in St. John.
Okay, I mentioned Justin Bailey a second ago. As we tape this, he has been traded to the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. So Justin Bailey moves, this is according to Josh Brown, who writes for the Waterloo Regional Record. So it looks like he has been moved. David Miller, a third and 15, a second and 16, a second and 18, a conditional third in 2018 move as well. So there you go, Justin Bailey to the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. I was under the impression, and I know that he kicked tires there, but I thought that Sherry Bassin ultimately was going to pick up Justin Bailey, that the Erie Otters would get Justin Bailey. And that now makes Nick Ritchie the big trade piece that's sitting out there for the Peterborough Petes.
Yeah, that one's a fascinating one for me, because the Petes have started to kind of turn things around here, much the way they did last year. And he's probably a guy you want to keep if you hope on playing some home playoff games. Joel Weigel goes from Niagara to London. That one just came down the pipe. So deals continue to trickle in here, but it's going to be fascinating to see where it all ends up. And, you look at the Kitchener Rangers. I think when Steve Spott left there, the cupboard was bare. So they've had to do some things there to recover some picks and then start worrying about drafting going forward and developing those players. So tough for Kitchener fans to see Justin Bailey leave, I'm sure, but he goes to a good place in Sault Ste. Marie. And, Kyle Raftus, I know, has been in on a couple of things so far, and he's finally pulled the trigger on his first big deal.
All right, so I'm almost scared to get off the air for fear of trades trickling into the podcast here, Sammy. But we will take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk to Connor McDavid, gold medalist for Team Canada's under 20 efforts, and also first line center for the Erie Otters. Junior continues in moments.
I'm Steven Stamkos of the Tampa Bay Lightning. I played for the Sarnia Sting in the OHL.
Pleased to be joined by Connor McDavid, gold medal around his neck, on his way back to play with the Erie Otters of the OHL. Connor, first of all, congratulations. I know it's a wide brush question, but what were your impressions of this year's junior tournament compared to last?
Just the way we were able to come together as a team off the ice. That is a huge part of it. Last year, not to say we weren't a close group, but this year just it was a special group off the ice.
Yeah, Benoit Grew talked a lot about the chemistry, and it started kind of within the staff. And the tic-tac-toe thing has been something that's been often talked about. Is that something you can expand upon? And I think it really, maybe I'm wrong here, but I think it helped integrate the team with the coaching staff. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. Coach Ben, that was something that he wanted to make very clear at the beginning of camp. The coaches and players are a team too, and we should work together. And he did a great job, with that tic-tac-toe thing or whatever it was. He did a great job of, creating that communication line between, the players and the coaches.
We talked to Ryan Jankowski a couple of weeks ago here on the podcast before the tournament, and we talked about the composition of Team Canada, the philosophy of selection, and he said, this year we're following the Sochi model from the Olympics. We're taking the players with the most amount of skill and putting them in situations and assuming they can adapt to do things that with their club teams they might not necessarily do. From your point of view, Connor, what were you asked to do that you might not have been asked to do with the Erie Otters?
I'm not too sure, to be honest. I played kind of a similar role. Obviously just not playing as much and not relying on that as heavily because the team was so deep and scoring and all that. But I played kind of a similar role than I do in Erie. But it's the World Juniors, and you have to do things that you're not necessarily all that comfortable with. And I think everyone had to adapt.
There was one constant that Benoit Grew had. Once you settled in with Curtis Lazar, he mixed in Braden Point and Nick Petan. But why was there such good chemistry between you and Curtis?
I'm not too sure what it was, to be honest. But I don't think it started that way for sure. I know the media was pretty hard on both of us at the beginning of the tournament. And there was an adjustment period. But I thought, we both got better as the tournament went on. And by the end of the tournament here in Toronto, but our chemistry was pretty good.
Coming off the hand injury, everybody was sort of waiting for when Connor McDavid was going to really feel comfortable again with his game. At what point during the tournament, Connor, did you say to yourself, I'm back and I'm just as good as I was before?
That's kind of tough. I don't really know if there was any kind of point where you say I'm back or anything like that, but there's just a time where you feel more comfortable on the ice and I was starting to feel more comfortable, kind of as we got close to that American game. That's kind of when I was starting to feel a little bit better. And when we got to Toronto, having that couple of days off, I felt really good going into Toronto. So
I'm always fascinated by the team dynamic. Is there a guy on that team that maybe you didn't know a lot of or a lot about going into the tournament that you forged a good relationship with?
But it's hard to single out one guy. We were all really good friends on this team, and that's part of the reason why we were so good is that, not just a couple of guys came together, literally everyone came together, and that's why, we were so good.
I want to ask you about one specific play, one specific pass behind the net where the entire world thought you were going around the net, only to see you cut in front and feather a beautiful pass to Nick Petan, who went shelf. Everybody thought you were going behind the net, and your cut was hard, and you found a lane, and you made that pass. Was that something, a decision you made spur of the moment, or did you think that I was going behind the net? If you can break down that play from your point of view, that would really be fantastic.
Yeah, there was just a loose puck, and you know, it was kind of a scramble down there, and I was just able to get the puck. You know, that D kind of assumed that I was going to go behind the net, so he kind of cheated. And you know, when you see that, that's when you can cut hard and, you know, kind of bring it back the other way. And then you know, you once you get out in front, you know, he's kind of at your mercy. You can kind of do whatever. So that would kind of be the thinking behind that.
Connor, how much of a difference with your off-season training and being a year older, a year stronger, did you notice in your game in this year's tournament compared to last?
Yeah, I thought it was huge. You know, just being a couple inches taller and, you know, weighing a little bit more, it certainly helped you know, on the face-off and in the corner and all that stuff. It, it all kind of helped. Last year was a little bit different. I was 16 and you know, was able to get pushed around a lot. But you know, this year I thought I fit in a little better.
Were there any nervous moments? Of course, Russia making it 5-4 in Monday night's game might have been one. Before the U.S. game, the New Year's Eve game, the highly anticipated matchup and showdown between yourself and Jack Eichel. What were the moments that you said to yourself, this is a big-time scenario, or this is sort of a nervous time for hockey players?
When you know, that lead is starting to slip against Russia, that's when you're starting to get a little worried. But you know, at no point did anyone panic, and you know, no one was really necessarily all that worried. I mean, you know, we still had the lead, but you know, when they score one and then they score two, and you know, when they score that third goal, you're thinking to yourself, you know, can this really happen? And it was a little bit nerve wracking there in the second intermission, but you know, that's where the leadership came into play, and you know, Curtis and Ben and you know, a lot of the guys in the room did a great job stepping up and, you know, keeping everyone calm. And no, we thought we had a great third period, just closing it out.
Connor, when you look at this the hockey club, and you look at the tournament, and especially that final game, it gave me visions of the nastiness going back to the 70s and 80s. And I know in the summer development camp, those two games were nasty. You didn't get a chance to play, but you likely watched the Subway Super Series. Was it as nasty out on the ice as it appeared on TV?
Yeah, it was a nasty game. I mean, a lot of chippiness, a lot of stuff going on behind the play, and you know, that's kind of what you can expect with an old rivalry like Canada and Russia.
As you head back to Erie with the Otters, you can have yourself a couple of new teammates. Remy Elley, Jake Marchman come in from Belleville. You already made the trade with Sudbury earlier on this season as well. So you're going home to your club team, to a new dynamic and a sprint to the OHL championships. How much looking forward to getting back to Erie?
Yeah, I'm really excited. I haven't been able to play a game with them since, you know, November 11th, and you know, it's been a while since I've been on the ice with them. But you know, I'm really looking forward to get back and seeing the guys, and you know, getting back into a daily routine with them, and you know, going out and winning some hockey games.
We got one piece of advice as you head back to Erie: no more fights, okay?
Thanks a lot.
Saturday, congrats again on the big win with Team Canada. Best of luck with the Otters the rest of the way.
Thanks again.
Hey, Sam, in a lot of people's minds, this was a tournament that was going to be defined by Connor McDavid versus Jack Eichel. Didn't turn out to be that way, but in the process, did we put to end the debate over who really is number one, that it is Connor McDavid, period, and then number two is Jack Eichel?
Yeah, it wasn't much of a debate for me going in, but that was surely the stamp on it, no question. The final nail in the coffin, and you know, the numbers and whatever else. But I think what you would be so excited about if you were a scout is just watching the progression from game one to game seven, and just how good he was, especially against Slovakia. I mean, he was on another planet in the semifinal, and obviously very good in the final against Russia as well. But no question, you can put the number 15 right in his jersey right now, because he'll be going first.
You know, interesting about Connor McDavid, we focus so much on the offense. We talked about that cut with the, I think it was the hat-trick goal with Nick Patan. Even before that, that goal where Patan's second, where he had the defender draped all over him and still made a beautiful pass across the crease. We focus so much on the offense of Connor McDavid, but I'll tell you what, considering he's not Lawson Crouse, considering he's not Nick Ritchie, he's not a big-bodied guy, he's one of the most aggressive and effective forecheckers that I've seen come down the OHL pipe in a long time.
I think because he's got such a good stick and he's got good positioning and he has the ability to anticipate the play like few others. So all of those things help alleviate the need to be a physical guy. And that's why I think he's so adept in those roles. When you look at him on the back track as well, he's extremely dangerous, Jeff, because he can give you that burst of speed to catch up to you. And B, he's so lightning quick with the stick. That a quick stick lift, then when you don't even anticipate it's coming, and back the other way it goes. So he's his overall skill set lends himself to be a dynamic player in all three zones.
Yeah, one of, if not the smartest player in the entire tournament. He heads back to Erie now, and we'll talk a little bit, or we already have talked a little bit about the trades that Erie has made, but how do you handicap the Otters now going forward?
Well, I think the problem exists that they had last year. I think they'd like to be a little bit deeper on the back end, and who knows, that still may be addressed, at some time during or after the podcast, but probably one more piece back there would serve them well as a steady Eddie type guy who could fit in maybe a 3-4 spot. They're not easy to come by, those guys, but again, the depth up front is pretty undeniable right now.
All right, Sam, so there you go. Connor McDavid and the Erie Otters, by the way, next in action Thursday against Sarnia. Friday, they face off against the London Knights. When we come back, you know who else is making noise in the OHL? Oh, yeah, North Bay, the Battalion. We'll talk to their head coach, Stan Butler, in moments.
I'm Scott Lawton from the Philadelphia Flyers. I played for the Oshawa Generals in the Ontario Hockey League.
Sam, pleased to be joined now by the Director of Hockey Operations and the head coach of the North Bay Battalion. Hockey fans across the country know this name, Stan Butler. Stan, how are you today, sir?
Good, guys. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, great to be here. Great to be talking to you, that's for sure.
I'm just on a bus going to beautiful Ottawa, so on the two-lane highway.
No rest for a head coach or director of hockey operations. Always a game, always somewhere to get to. A couple of deals want to get your thoughts on and on how they came together. You pick up Nick Mutri from the from Sarnia. You pick up Ryan Kujawinski from the Kingston Frontenacs. How did these two deals come together for you?
Well, I mean, in the Nick Mutri deal, it was something that Jim Pellifito and I had talked to for a while, and They had interest in a young goalie. We had Evan Cormier, and you know, the way we were looking at it is we thought Evan would be a starting goalie in the league, and Jake Smith, who's our 19-year-old goalie, who was our goalie last year when we went to the finals, was, you know, definitely a guy we would be bringing back as an overage. So it was one of those things that we probably would have had to move Cormier early next year anyway. So with what we could get, we thought that was a good deal. And when I was talking to Jim about draft picks, he's pretty reasonable. We space them out every 2 years. So, from that perspective, it's good in the sense that you're not hit hard every year on draft picks.
Stan, you've been around the league a long time. Can you believe some of the prices for players now, and especially when it comes to picks? It boggles the mind, doesn't it?
Well, it's crazy. I mean, I remember when I started in the league, I mean, I'm sure bread was 20 cents, but... at the end of the day, a second round pick was worth a lot, right? And I mean, now you're looking at 2 seconds in a young player before you can get a deal done for a 19-year-old player. And I think what's happened in the league, quite frankly, guys, is that people don't really want to trade a lot of players. So the only way that compensation could be fair in some people's eyes is by doing the picks. And there's the philosophy that, players have names and picks don't. So, some people look at the picks. I mean, I traded a fourth-round pick in 2020, and I said to my assistant coaches, that's some minor Adam kid playing in the GTHL right now.
Jeez, yeah, and I mean, it's fascinating.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. But, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, if that's the price that it costs to get players, you have two options. I mean, you can choose to be involved in trying to better your hockey team, or you can just stay out of it and let other people do that. So, the one thing we've tried to do is we haven't given up any more than one pick per season. So, we're still pretty good with picks. Like, we've got 14, minimum of 14 every year. So, we may lose a couple seconds, but at the end of the day, that's up to our scouts, who we have a lot of confidence in, to find a Rafi Torres in the sixth round or someone like that, and we'll be fine.
Look at your hockey club now. How do you compare it to last year's team that went to the OHL championship?
Well, I think now it's pretty similar. I think Adam Mowry and Kujalinski, although they're different players than Gaudreau and Thompson, they're big and they're strong. So they kind of fill the role of those two guys. I mean, Nick Paul obviously is a year older. Michael Modio is a year older. I mean, on defense, you know, we only lost Dylan Belugis, so our defense is pretty much the same. And then we picked up Oscar Kozak. That was a player that we had drafted a long time ago, and he was at Ferris State University and decided to come out. So, you know, I think we've got a pretty good team, but, you know, there's a team pretty close to a city called Whitby that's a powerhouse right now, and you know, just we had to make those moves, to, I think, just to be able to have a chance to be competitive with them.
Yeah, that team, of course, a team used to coach the Oshawa Generals. When they started to make some of their moves, and the most recent one bringing in Dakota Mermis and Mike McCarron from the London Knights, how much did you say to yourself, we need to respond to what Oshawa is doing? Because this thing is sort of the showdown that everyone can see is, you know, the showdown we saw last year between Oshawa and North Bay.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, Jeff, I mean, our trades were well on their way before the Oshawa trades were announced. You know, I'm sure Roger Hunt's the same in Oshawa. You know, we were trying to make our team better. We wanted to improve. I mean, the one thing we didn't want to give up is our, you know, Zach Fourier, who's our 16-year-old first-rounder. Brett McKenzie is our first-rounder from our 17-year-old draft. So, you know, our goal was to be able to do the trades that we did. But, you know, we always want to try to keep, you know, we want to be competitive every year. So we wanted to improve our team, but, you know, you say the philosophy all in. I wouldn't say we're all in, but we're definitely going to be competitive enough to have a chance to be in.
Now, one guy who's a mainstay from last year is Nick Paul. And Stan, I don't know if you remember a conversation you had with RJ Broadett and I, and you said, I've been on Ryan Jankowski to give Nick Paul a look for the World Junior team. Now, I got to be honest, I didn't see enough of him, and I didn't really know him all that well, but I still looked at you sideways. And here you go. You've got a gold medalist on your hands. What is it about Nick Paul that makes him such a good player?
Well, I just know, having been to the World Juniors, I just know when you get into the big games, you know, he plays 200 feet. He's a smart player. You know, he's got more skill than people give him credit for, and he's a big body, and he's good defensively. So, I mean, just from talking to Ryan, the type of players that he wanted, and I mean, Ryan and I go back a long ways. I mean, I've known Ryan long before he was director of scouting for Hockey Canada. But, you know, I mean, you know, he was kind of looking at me, you're right. But I'm sure today when he, you know, looks at his team, not just with Nick Paul but a few other guys, you know, he's pretty happy with those decisions. And, I mean, the goal that Nick got last night, you know, was a big goal at that time of the game. And, you know, that's a goal that's scored because you're big and strong and your stick's on the ice going to the net. So, as I said to one of the kids on our team, that's a 16-year-old on our team, this year, I said, when Nick Paul was 16 years old, he's playing on the Mississauga Reps midget team that didn't make the playoffs.
It is remarkable the stories these guys come through, and you've been at the game in the OHL with the 1 year in Prince George in the Western League going back to 1994, and maybe the obvious answer is stick budgets, but what's been the biggest change that you've noticed in Canadian junior hockey going back to 94?
Well, I mean, you know, when I look back to 94, to be honest with you, Brian Boyes, who just won a gold medal too, he was a trainer in Oshawa. He worked at a clinic till noon. I taught halftime school in Oshawa at the noon. Johnny Goodwin was a volunteer assistant coach that worked at the Hydro. You know, Wayne Daniels was the general manager, and he had a full-time job at GM. So that's kind of how the team was run, and probably a budget of about $650,000. You know, now when you look at the Ontario Hockey League, you look at all the new rinks that Sam sees all the time on his travels. Most teams have two full-time assistant coaches. Most teams have, you know, at least one full-time trainer. Some have two. Some have assistant GMs, and their budgets are probably gone from, I don't know, $650,000 in 1994 to about $2.2 million now. So, you know, it's when I say it's big business, I don't mean it's big business. You know, there's not the profits that I think a lot of people in the media think there is. Maybe there is in some of the bigger centers that have 9,000 and 10,000 seat arenas, but for a city the size of North Bay, who has 4,100 seats, you know, you need a lot of money to get to that $2.2 million. So, you know, it's just a professional. You know, it's professional for the kids. It's a mini NHL now, and I think that's the biggest change that I've seen, guys, from the time when I started.
Speaking of North Bay and, you know, Brampton moving to North Bay, it's a disappointment for me, obviously, because I live in the area and I don't get the opportunity, A, to meet with you, which I really enjoyed on a semi-regular basis, but to be able to see some of the league's other teams. What's it been like? What's the move been like for you?
Oh, it's been a big change for me, guys. I mean, I'm a Toronto boy, born and bred, grew up in the East End. Probably the only thing that I did wrong was go to the same high school as Dave Branch, Monarch Park. But, you know, it's been a big change. I mean, I love Toronto. It's my home. You know, I had to move from there. I'm far away from my daughter and my son's at university. So, but saying that, I mean, North Bay is a great hockey town. The people are supporting us, you know, Sam. And, I mean, I think you could see with games in Brampton, I mean, I really think that if we would have had the support in Brampton that we had in North Bay, when I saw last year the playoffs with the crowds and things like that, I think that would have made a difference in, you know, a few years where I think we could have gone a lot farther in the playoffs. Because, you know, the one thing, you know, James Boyd's playing in Mississauga now too is, you know, when you're playing in Mississauga, you're playing in Brampton, it's almost like a neutral site game.
Yeah, it's got to be challenging. Yeah, as you know, Stan, I work with Nick Kyprios on a regular basis. He played in North Bay when they were the Centennials.
He's a legend up here.
Well, 60 goals, right? 16th overall in OHL scoring in history. He reminds me of that constantly, Stan, as you can imagine. But, you know, he always talks about the fan support and the fan base and the people that came out. What's the fan support been like for North Bay?
It's been unbelievable, and it's funny you said that, Jeff, because the night the team was moving up there, Nick called me right away, and you know, after we went through the minor, you know, the details of what was going on, I said to him, I said, Nick, I know you played up there. What do you think? He said, Stan, you're going to love coaching up there. And it's a great place to coach. You know, the fans are crazy. It's a hockey city. It's Northern Ontario. It's a big night out for the people to go to the games. They're very knowledgeable. You can't fool them. But, I mean, they're very supportive of the team. We call them the seventh man. And you know what? Every player that's played there from, you know, the days of the Hatchers or Nick Kyprios, right up to, you know, Barkley Goodrow last year. I mean, to a man, they all love playing there. And it's the city that, you know, once kids get there, I think they realize that it's a great place to play hockey.
Stan, I just wanted to ask you, it would be my final question for you. Just about the game in general, the Ontario Hockey League in general. I mean, you're well cemented in the league now. Where is the Ontario Hockey League right now?
Well, I mean, I think Dave Branch has done a good job, and you know, I'm part of the competitions committee, and we always try to think a step ahead in our league, and we want to be the team, you know, or the league that's a little bit ahead, and you know, we try to keep our focus on that. And I mean, I think the league's in good hands. I mean, you know, I think a lot of the skilled players are, you know, it's a good league for them to play in. You know, Joe Birch in the recruitment area, now Adam Dennis, have done a good job. You know, most of the top players, you know, want to play in the league. So, you know, I just think the brand, the OHL brand, is a good brand. You know, I mean, I think schooling, I know I can only speak for North Bay, but, you know, our kids, there's university college there. You know, if you want to be a scholastic player like a Matt Duchesne, there's no doubt that you can be that. So, you know, I think it's in great hands. I mean, you know, the biggest challenge, and Nick Kyprios will get a kick out of this, Jeff, is when I went to North Bay, is people understanding that Dennis Bombe isn't there anymore and there's not going to be 8 fights and warm-ups and things like that. Like, I mean, yeah. The league has changed. And you know, yeah. That watching it, Sam. It's a speed-skilled game now. And when we play European countries, you know, whether it's the game last night or whatever, I mean, we have as much or more skill than any country in the world. And that's a credit to putting a league or an environment together that allows those skills players to play in a safe but competitive environment.
Then this will be my question, Stan. We thank you for your time and wish you the best the rest of the season into the playoffs with North Bay. If Stan Butler could change one thing about the game in the OHL, what would it be?
Oh, God, that's a good question. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think the one area in our league that, you know, probably needs to catch up a little bit is the officiating. And I think that's similar to the CFL, where you have full-time athletes, full-time coaches, and you have very good officials, but they're part-time. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the one challenge the league has, you know, to work with guys that, you know, have other, quote, real jobs and be at the standard that, you know, the league would like them to be. And I think that's, you know, I think Conrad Hashay's done a good job. But I think as the same as the CFL, or maybe the NFL for that matter, it's definitely a challenge.
Excellent points. Stan, it's always a pleasure. Best of luck with the battalion the rest of the way. We'll keep in touch.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day. Bye now.
Safe travel, Stan. Take care.
Yeah, bye now.
Sam, I remember watching Stan Butler's Oshawa Generals in their first year in existence in the OHL under Stan Butler, and that team had Mark Savard on it, had Jeff Ware on it, had Nathan Peretz on the squad as well. And really, he's become, for a lot of people, myself included, that mainstay, that constant in the OHL. He's one of my favorite people to talk to, one of the most intelligent guys you'll talk to in the OHL. What are your impressions, or what comes to your mind when you hear the name Stan Butler?
Well, first and foremost, I wasn't born and I wasn't around for that team, Jeff.
Oh, just of course, yes.
Knowing
certainly,
that, I'm
yes,
a little younger than you are.
Yeah, of course, Sammy.
But he's a dynamite guy. I appreciate my conversations with Stan as much as anybody because there's give and take there. He's got a wonderful personality, excellent sense of humor. And you're right, I think it's good for the league in general, regardless of which of the three leagues you're talking about, to have coaches who are there, who are mainstays, to represent stability. And Stan is the epitome of that in the Ontario Hockey League.
And you look at some of the players that he's graduated. I mean, you just mentioned Matt Duchene a couple of seconds ago, Barclay Goodrow, of course, playing with the San Jose Sharks. You mentioned Mark Savard playing with the Oshawa
Cody
Generals.
Cody Hodson, Rusty
Cody
Kessler.
Hodge. I mean, yep, go. And, you know, listen, I remember talking to Jay Harrison a few years ago, now with Winnipeg. Yeah. I said, hey, what are your memories of playing with the Battalion? He said, it's funny, I still check in with Stan all the time. Like, he has that type of relationship with all the kids that have gone forward. Rafi Torres, you mentioned, that's another one.
Yeah, no, he's a... You know, and it's really unfortunate because, you know, the one thing about Stan, he may not win every year, but he does kind of exactly what the league, you know, prides itself on, and that's develop players for the next level.
He does. And you know what? Throw Brent Burns into that equation as well. And Brent Burns is someone that can play up front and can play back end as well. And Stan's done a wonderful job with that that battalion program. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Time for our CHL alumni segment. We'll dovetail it with a little World Junior hockey flavor as well. Stay tuned. Manny Legacy up in moments here on Junior.
I'm Stephen Weiss of the Detroit Red Wings, and I played for the Plymouth Whalers of the Ontario Hockey League.
Sammy, this is going to be a real treat for me. You know why? Because Manny Legacy is not just a gold medal goaltender from 1993 at the World Junior Championships. He's not just a former goaltender from the Niagara Falls Thunder under George Burnett. And we'll talk plenty about his time in the OHL. He is not just someone who played a number of years in the NHL, but he is also someone who played on one of my favorite hockey teams of all time. And that is the Toronto Planets of Roller Hockey International. And I never missed a game, Manny Legacy. You and Dan Daou was on the team, and Lou Franceschetti, and who's a big tough kid? Ed Lubicic, I think, was on that team. Christian Sikora.
Yep.
Christian Sikora was on that team. So, listen, if we can start the interview by talking about RHI, I would love it. Just indulge me. What are your memories, Manny, of playing in the RHI?
It was probably one of the most fun I ever had. In the summertime, I actually had an absolute blast, and we went to the playoffs and made the semifinals, and I couldn't go because the Olympic team tryout started. So, you know, but that was my only regret of the summer. It was just an absolute blast. Different, but a blast.
I can't believe you missed the Olympic tryouts for that.
You know what the funny thing was? The Olympic team said I could go, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to press my luck. 19 years old. I don't think so.
Yeah, that was that was a fun league. Hey, quickly before we get to 1993, your thoughts on this year's edition of Team Canada? You know, going through the entire tournament, then winning gold Monday night against the Russians.
I thought they were from top to bottom. They were as good as any team I've seen in the years to come. And you know, first two games they just looked like thoroughbreds at a track. They just, four lines just kept coming. It didn't stop the whole tournament, and it was fun to watch. It was a real treat to watch. Even when Russia came back last night, made it 5-4, went into the intermission, the second period, came out in the third, and went right back to their game plan and didn't waver and didn't show panic, and it was great. And then Fucali locked up the door. It was awesome. It was really good. It was really a lot of fun to watch. And I live in Detroit now, so I get to rub it into all the Americans, so it's great.
What kind of bond do you have with the guys that you won it with in 93?
But even when you see them around the rink, like I saw Chris Pronger, his kid was up at a tournament in Detroit, and you know, you see each other across the rink, and it's automatic. You just walk over and, you know, just pick up from where you left when we were 18, 19 years old. And, you know, I see Marty Lapointe all the time. We go to Chicago, and you know, you just call him, hey, Marty, I'm going, let's go out and have some dinner. Like, it's just a bond. You know, so it's great.
And that tournament as well, 1993, in a lot of ways, that was, even though Team Canada won the gold medal, that was the Forsberg tournament, man. 31 points was just remarkable. What were your thoughts on watching Peter Forsberg play?
Pure panic, because I knew we had to play him our third last game, and I'm like, oh, geez. And it was him and Naslund run a line together, and their power play was ridiculous, and they just beat Japan like 21-0, and they both had like 12 points. It was just fear, basically. I'm like, this is not going to be good. It's going to be in their home country. The place is going to be packed, and you know, we were lucky enough to come out on top 5-4, you know, and that was pretty much the gold medal game. It was a little different back then. We had just the round robin, and you know, if you made one tie, you were pretty much done. So every game was a pressured full game. But, that was a lot of fear, thinking then end up having to play against them pretty much my whole life in the NHL. So that was great, too. And then in the Olympic team in 94, he ended up, you know, beating us in the shootout with that goal, and I was on the bench. So, you know, it was many years of his torture, especially playing in Detroit when he was in Colorado.
He tortured a lot of netminders. Sammy?
What made you so good in that tournament? I mean, arguably the single greatest goaltending performance in the history of Canadian World Junior teams.
Well, thanks. But it was Bob McKenzie, you know, going into the whole tournament. They finished sixth the year before, and he was telling us how bad, you know, all you heard was how bad the goaltending was going to be and how bad this was going to be. And it was basically the goaltending wasn't going to, we weren't going to be able to win gold because of the goaltending at, you know, Forsberg. So, you know, it really put us into a zone where there was really no pressure. You know, Bob was taking it all off us. He said that the goalies were going to be awful, so there was really no pressure. You know, everyone expected me to be bad. So it was just going and trying to play as best I could. And the team I had in front of me was amazing. If you look at who we had in our team, it just from top to bottom was just amazing.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the flashpoint players who had a fantastic tournament himself, who went on to have a terrific NHL career, who unfortunately was cut short due to concussions, was Paul Kariya. What was he like to play with?
Well, I got to, you know, obviously got a great chance to play with him in the World Juniors, but also got a chance again to play with him in St. Louis. And he is a hockey nerd, if you could say that. You know, everything revolved around hockey. And, you know, he's that typical total pro where, you know, it's bed by 11, everything revolves. He knows every stat on every guy. He knows every situation. He knows everything about the game. And, you know, it's pretty impressive to watch a guy with that highly skilled take it to the next level and thinking and preparing for different sort of events and what goes on in his behind-the-scenes training. It's pretty impressive.
We can switch gears just a little bit, if you will, Manny, and talk about the Niagara Falls Thunder. I mean, the Ontario Hockey League then and the Ontario Hockey League now, I would assume you still have some sort of exposure to it, but how much has the junior game changed?
Well, it's changed just as much as the NHL game's changed. You know, when I came in, it was rough and tumble, and if you looked at a guy wrong, you might get sticked in the face and someone's dropping their gloves and going to tear your head off, where, you know, the NHL used to be like that. Now it's got away from the fighting and the rough stuff. And so the OHL has gone away from it, more highly skilled and more development of players. And, you know, no one played in the rink that we played in. We played in Niagara Falls, and I think it was, you know, as big as a matchbox. Like, it was, you could score from center ice, you know. So, you know, and everything seemed to be on top of you. But, you know, the game's changed, you know, and you see it in the NHL game, and you see it in the OHL, and you see it in college, you know. So there's definitely no fear. The little guy can go up to the big guy and chirp at him, and there's no fear. Where, you know, you're a rookie, there was a lot of fear. Guys played with a lot of fear because you knew a veteran might take your head off any given night. So, you know, the game has changed in that aspect a lot.
You know, when you did play in Niagara Falls, and I remember going to that tiny little rink that you're talking about, and trust me, it was uncomfortable for a spectator, too. I mean, you had tough guys. I mean, Andy Bizzo, I remember, was equal parts tough and
crazy.
Equal parts crazy. Crazy. Yeah,
yes, just he was crazy.
I remember Bizzo was almost certifiable. But, you know, one of the toughest players on that team, and I think you were on the bench for this one to watch it. Were you there when Greg Scott, the goaltender, fought Tom Sullivan of Windsor?
Yeah, I was on the bench. Yeah,
okay.
I was like, it was one of the best fights all year. It was fun.
Well, it was funny because Tom Sullivan had the beautiful fight with Ryan Vanderbush, which is one of my favorite fights of all time, which just didn't end. And he fights Greg Scott, and you're thinking, what the heck is Greg Scott thinking, taking on Tom Sullivan? And he hands it to him, Manny. Take us back with your memories of that fight.
Greg Scott, I played with Greg Scott in Junior B in Vaughan, and then we both got drafted to Niagara Falls. He was the toughest guy on our team by far that year. You know,
wow.
Andy Bizzo had gone already. Brad May was gone. You know, he was our toughest player by far. Like, he was extremely strong. He had that long reach. You know, he was 6'3", 6'4". You know, he was a typical goalie. We're all little nuts, and, you know, he was one of the toughest guys in the team. You know, it showed when you were like, everybody's like, oh, he's going to fight him? But there was really no worry because we knew he could handle himself, you know?
Yeah.
So it wasn't like somebody, if I was fighting, it would have been just a total lawn chair fold-up, you know? But, you know, we knew he could handle himself.
Well, that was and you can find the video on YouTube. Like, it's out there. People can see it.
Yeah.
The remarkable thing is because normally when you see goalie fights, people, to your point, they jump in to break it up right away. But your team just stood back. Was like, hey, don't worry, Greg's.
Yeah,
and it wasn't
Greg
as if Tom Sullivan. It's not as if Tom Sullivan was a slouch. He's one of the toughest guys in the OHL.
He was one of their toughest guys. Yeah, in the OHL, he was one of the toughest guys. And we knew that Greg Scott was like, he might knock this guy out. Like, that was our thinking. It wasn't like, hold on, our goalie's fighting. It was, oh my God, he might knock this guy out. You know?
Oh, that's amazing.
He finally got his opportunity to drop the glove.
That's remarkable. That's remarkable. Yeah.
So often we see, in our alumni segment, players who talk about guys just like that, the most unsuspecting guy you might think would be the toughest. Is there any player you can remember in your career going back to Niagara Falls that was such a marvelous player but never had the luck or got injured, or one of those guys that no one really appreciated their skills?
Kevin Brown. You know, I grew up with him in with the Don Mills Flyers, and then we both went to Niagara Falls, and I was shocked that he never really got a better look. And what he could do with the puck in the corners, he had a great release. His one-timer was great, great speed, you know. And we played in a little rink, and it didn't really give him a chance to show what his highly skilled is because there was really no room to move on a game-to-game basis. But I thought for sure he was an NHL player, you know, and he was going to play in the NHL for a lot of years. And just the way that he moved, and, you know, his shot and release and everything was great.
By the way, Manny, that's Kevin Brown of the Toronto Planets of RHI. Thank you very much when we're referring to Kevin Brown. One of my favorites. Tell us about George Burnett. We were talking a couple of moments ago about Stan Butler and his legacy in the OHL. You played for another legendary coach. Tell us about George.
George, great coach. Probably one of the better coaches I've ever got a chance to play for. Can't say the best because I got a chance to play for Scotty Bowman, but he was up there. Very intense. He was great at our level because he, and in Niagara Falls, just because he knew how to get the best out of players and knew how to handle guys. And you know, how to get them to come to the rink every day and play. He was hard to talk to at times, but, you know, but to knowing how to get the stuff, the right stuff out of the players, he was really, really good at it. And still is. You know, he's still doing a pretty good job there in the OHL, so.
Now, forgive my ignorance here, Manny, but this is our alumni segment. What are you up to these days, and what are you doing in the Detroit area?
I work for the Columbus Blue Jackets. I'm the second goalie coach there. I'm probably in Springfield 20 days a month, and then I'm in Kalamazoo. I take care of all the minor league guys, so they got me traveling around a lot. Then I run my goalie company when I'm back in Detroit, and doing pretty good. And, you know, I have a great partner at Legacy Hockey Academy, so we have I'm pretty busy, and Columbus keeps me busy, and it's a lot of fun, you know, giving back to the game and teaching some of these young kids who just absolutely fly around at 6'6", and it's just amazing me every day when I'm dealing with these kids and giving lessons how big and how athletic they've gotten.
It is remarkable, too. We've seen, you know, in a lot of ways, the death of the small goaltender in the NHL. Do you mm-hmm. think there's ever room again for a small goalie in the show?
Yeah, I do. You've got to be a special goalie now. You know, just because us little guys before used to move way faster than the big guy. Like, the big guy was just lumpy and awkward, and, you know, there was really no athletic ability, and that's totally changed. Everyone who's 6'3", 6'4", is just as athletic as a 5'9", to 5'11", guy. You know, but do I think that a guy under 6 foot will make it? Yeah, no question. You know, if he stops the puck better than everybody else, I don't understand why you wouldn't give him that opportunity. It might take him a little bit longer. You know, he mm-hmm. might not get the first look, and a team might give a guy 6'4" a better chance than have him sit in the minors for a couple more years, like one or two more years, and then finally say, okay, let's just see lighting of depth down there. Let's just give him a chance, and then he might only get one kick at the can at it, and he might have to excel then. But, you know, I do. You see it all the time in junior where these guys are 5'11", 6 foot, especially college. You know, you're seeing everybody who's, like, all their goalies are right around that 6 foot, a little under, a little over, because all the big guys go to the OHL and they want to be the fast track. But, you know, you see a lot of great goalies in college that are at that bubble where you're like, why isn't he getting drafted, or why hasn't he been drafted yet? So
the position has evolved so much. What type of goalie coach would you consider yourself? The blocking type, the athletic guy, the hybrid guy? Where are you on the continuum?
Athletic. Like, you have to be athletic to play. Can't block. The hybrid is pretty much kind of just a thing, because you should be able to do, if you're an athletic guy, you should be able to do it all. You know, you got to be able to move. You got to be able to get into the reverses off your post, blowing off the post, retracting. You know, your lateral movement's got to be amazing. All your catching the edges. You know, if you watch now, most of the game's played on your knees. You know, every goalie's pretty much, once they're down, they stay down, and they're just flying around the crease, and I believe in that. And if you're a blocker, you're not going to be able to move. The game's changed. Like, when I was in Detroit, I knew if I got out my angle, I could take another foot, and I didn't have to worry about the back door, because I knew we could just get Nick Lindstrom or Chelios or somebody on the back door locking somebody up, you know, grabbing a hold of them, and they're never going to get a rebound or never get a chance to get to the net. Now everybody's flying through, so goalies have to be able to make 2 and 3 saves, you know, and that's what's expected of you. You know, it's not just one and done. You have to make 2 and 3. And the way they're shooting for rebounds and driving to the net these days, you've got to be athletic. If you're not, you're just going to be sitting watching these guys play on TV.
And, Manny, last question for you. And, listen, we thank you for your time. It's been a lot of fun talking
I'm
to you.
Fun.
Well, then let's talk about Fun City, or Sin City, as it were, because the NHL seems to be in a rush to get to Las Vegas. You played in Las Vegas in the IHL with the Thunder.
Yeah.
Who was on that? Who would have been on that team then? Radek Bonk wasn't on the team at that point,
no.
I don't think.
No, he was already in the NHL by then. Yeah.
He was already in the show. But what was the experience of playing in Las Vegas like? Because it's not as if Las Vegas hasn't had hockey before. They have, just not at the NHL level. What was the Las Vegas experience like for you?
It was really, really good because we had an unbelievable home record. Because we were terrible on the road, but everybody was either hungover or gambling all night. So, it's, you know, by the time they played the game, it was great. We knew they were going to be sluggish, so it was great.
Oh, yeah, that's remarkable.
A lot of fun, you know. You get kind of sick of the Strip because, you know, it's touristy and there's, you know, people are having fun. They're there on vacation and there's thousands of people there every day. So you kind of find your ways around. And I lived in Summerlin, so I was on the other side of the Thomas and Mac, because that's where we played. It was on the other side of the Strip. So you find there's different ways to get around. But, you know, you got great deals and restaurants and buffets and shows. And, you know, I love playing there. And then we actually got snow that year. It was the first time they had snow in like 20 years or something like that. And yeah, we actually got snow and, you know, got to play golf all year round. So that was great. And, with Corporation there, I think it's going to would hold an NHL team pretty good. And we had a pretty good fan support. I think we were average around 5,000 to 6,000 people. Obviously, the Thomas and Mac was way too big for that. But, you know, if it was a smaller venue, it would have been a great place to play.
You know what? It's a fascinating city, and it's a fascinating city for professional sports. I do wonder where does the fan base come from? I've always been under the impression
no one's ever born there, right? Everybody's brought in to work there, and most of it was all northern people. You know, that's what it was. It was all people that just moved there to work in the hotels and work in the industries of, you know, the bars and all that stuff, and you know that's who all came to the game and now live there, and you know that's basically all you saw. Every time you talk to someone, no one was ever from there. You know, and every time you go around town, they have it on their, you look on their nameplate, I'm from Nebraska or I'm from Massachusetts, you know. So no one's ever born there. And everybody comes in, and that's the fan support you got.
Fascinating. Hey, listen, man, it's been a ball catching up. And thanks for talking RHI with me, too. I've been waiting for so long to talk about a league that I loved so much. But listen, it's been a pleasure catching up. Thanks so much for doing this today. We'll catch up down the road.
Thank you so much for thinking of me.
For sure.
Call anytime. I love it.
Thanks, Manny. Hey, Sam, like, I'm serious. Like, I was a huge fan of RHI. It was only in Toronto for the 1 year, the Toronto Planets. And I didn't miss a single game. It was to the point where I remember not only was I a fan of the Toronto Planets, but I was in a roller hockey tournament, the Narch tournament in St. Louis. And actually, right after one game where everyone was going out, I went to go see the St. Louis Vipers play the New Jersey Rock and Rollers with Manon Rayom playing net for the squad. I was a humongous fan of RHI to the point where I wish that there were some hockey alternative in the summer, and I really think roller hockey would be the perfect complement to an ice hockey season in the winter. Having an RHI type, maybe it's sponsored by the NHL, maybe it's not, maybe it's its own loop, but man, was that a lot of fun in the summer.
Do the goalies wear the rollers?
They
too?
Did. They did. Yeah, they had special rollers, or do they turn them on the side? I'm pretty sure they had special ones for the goaltenders so they could actually move. But your point is good. Now, it's a lot more sophisticated than it was back when the RHI was in full effect and I was going. I can remember. Oh man, I remember Dan Daou playing his first game of roller hockey, and I thought to myself, "Well, here's a guy that played in the NHL. Like, here's Danny Daou who's going to come down the wing and snipe." And the biggest struggle for a pro player, Lou Franceschetti went through this too when he played for the Toronto Planets, and a lot of NHL guys that made the transition. I want to say that Bernie Federico played a bit, maybe Brian Trotsche dipped in a little bit to play in the RHI, was that you weren't able to stop. And so everything was a wide turn. If you tried to stop, this is the technology then, because the wheels and the boots, you kind of went ass over. So it was a real challenge to do that. So you ended up, it turned into a wide turn game, but the way the technology is now with the court and with the equipment and with the wheels, it's a much quicker and stop and start game. I just wish it would come back.
Claudio Alessio play in there, in that league?
I don't know.
Lucas's dad?
Lucas Lessio, former Niagara/Oshawa, just got called up by Arizona. Did his dad play in that league?
Dad,
really?
Oh, his dad was a wonderful player. He played in the Canadian-Italian Hockey League. Yeah. And I think he might have played in the Roller League as well. Borderline, I think he might even got a sniff with the Rangers at some point. He was a wonderful player at a younger age.
Wow, that's so cool. And listen,
but
catch
I think
up with
some
me.
Of the off-ice.
Yeah.
I think some of the off-ice distractions might have got him.
Yeah, that's happened to a player or two. What do you make of just talking to Manny Legacy and the conversation about the small goaltender? And Sam, we saw this last year at the MasterCard Memorial Cup in London with Justin Nicholls of the Guelph Storm, who got victimized by a team that, let's just be honest, exploited what turned out to be the weakest link in the Guelph Storm chain.
You know, It's interesting to me, Jeff, because I am definitely not a fan of the blocking type of guys. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I know your job is ultimately to stop the puck, but it's not to create, you know, an extra 10 or 15 chances a game as a result of that style. So I'm all for the athletic guy, but, you know, you get into the minds of NHL scouts and they don't want to go down that road. They just don't want to go down that road. So the Julia Billias of the world and, you know, the Justin Nichols and the Jake Smiths of the world, they're not going to get and be afforded those opportunities, because I think even with some NHL teams, there's probably a steadfast rule that you can't take a goalie under 6 feet.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, you've always seen that about forwards, and, well, you've always seen it about defensemen. The old saying, which goes like this, a small player has to prove that he can play in the league. A big player has to prove that he can't. And we're at the point now where you're saying that about goaltenders, and we never did before, but here we are.
Yeah, it's disappointing. I mean, I'll tell you, I was the biggest fan of Mike Palmateer growing up, and I don't know if there was a more athletic, kind of unorthodox guy in goal than him, but there was nobody more entertaining. But those days, I think, have passed us by, Jeff. I mean, it's too bad that that's the case, but I like what Manny has to say. I mean, he comes from the small athletic type, and so that's what he kind of preaches, but by the same token, if you can get a big guy with that same athleticism as a smaller guy, you probably hit a home run.
Yeah, listen, I was a big Palmateer fan growing up too. He was my guy. There was no one more athletic or fun to watch in the crease. All right, we'll wrap up another edition of Junior next. Stay tuned.
I'm Jonathan Durant from the Tampa Bay Lightning. I played for the Halifax Mooseheads in the Major Junior League.
Well, Sam, as we wrap up this week's edition of Junior, a couple of games. Pleased to announce that it's two games we get to plug coming up this weekend on Sportsnet. Friday Night Hockey, it is the Medicine Hat Tigers and the Vancouver Giants. And then Sunday at 3 o'clock Eastern, yes, we add our Sunday schedule now. The Brandon Wheat Kings facing off against the Calgary Hitmen. Medicine Hat Vancouver. Medicine Hat, a powerhouse team. Vancouver playing much better under new head coach Claude Noel.
Yeah, it should be a much better tilt than probably anticipated on the schedule. The Medicine Hat Tigers are a perennial playoff contender in that Eastern Conference, and they've made some tweaks to their lineup that might just be able to push them past the second round this year.
And we'll see the Brandon Wheat Kings, who we suspect will be right in that mix for the Edge and North Cup, with the big moves that they've made over the past couple of weeks facing off against the Calgary Hitmen, a team that, you know, many people, yours truly included, thought would be one of the powerhouses considering who they had coming back in the Western Hockey League this season. What do you think of Brandon and Calgary for Sunday afternoon, Sam?
Yeah, awesome. 1 o'clock local start, so won't be going out too much on the Saturday night, that's for sure. But no, Jeff, it should be, I'm really looking forward to watching Brandon, that's for sure. You know, they've got a powerhouse, and so it's going to be a lot of fun to watch the Wheaties, and maybe Calgary kind of gets things back on track and starts to make a rise. They've been middling there in the Eastern Conference for most of the year. New head coach, you know, Mike Moore's really put his stamp on this team as the general manager now. So that should still be a very good tilt. And looking forward to kind of that Friday, Sunday now as we move into the second half, the unofficial second half, I guess you call it.
That's right. As we head into 2015, now we'll have two CHL games for you weekly. Friday nights, that is a staple, and now we're adding the Sunday afternoon. On behalf of Sam Cosentino and our producer, Matt Brown, we thank you for joining us once again on Junior. Back next Wednesday for another edition of your favorite CHL podcast. Have a great week.